Every year, the NSH Symposium Convention features a wide array of science and research, including impressive poster programs. The poster floor is a petri dish of new ideas, collaborations, and exchange of great information. I'm Linda McDonald, an NSH member, a science lover, and the NSH poster chair. During the 42nd annual NSH Symposium Conference, we were fortunate enough to sit down with many of our poster presenters to talk more about their work and the passion behind it. I am thrilled to bring you this series of podcasts and hope you will enjoy these and be inspired to submit your very own poster.
Hi, this is David Kroll. I'm here with Guy Orchard, and I'm interviewing him regarding his poster that he recently submitted at the NSH Symposium in September or so of 2016. And his poster was entitled TrueSlice and TrueSlice Digital Histologic Dissection Devices, Introducing an Exciting Development and Providing Improved Accuracy. So, welcome. I'm glad you took the time to allow yourself to be interviewed for our membership. And I just wanted to talk to you first about how was your experience this year presenting this poster to the NSH membership?
Hello. Yes, hello, David. Pleasure, of course. I've been presenting for the NSH at the national conferences for several years. So, this is the first time that I've actually done a poster. So, for me, okay. It was a first time. But it was well organized as usual, and I enjoyed the experience. And I hope I gave good value for money for those that came and chatted to me.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, I looked through the abstract. Unfortunately, I didn't have a chance to actually view this poster, but I read the abstract, and it sounded very interesting. So what you're presenting here sounds like a unique device for grossing samples. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to find this instrument?
Yes, it's unique in the sense that it's really come about because, well, I'll tell you the story. I was standing in front of the delicatessen at my local supermarket watching them slice bacon and wondering why we couldn't develop a device of a similar nature that could deal with histological sections, but obviously with a far higher degree of accuracy because we're talking microns as opposed to millimeters. So that's where it started. And then I was drawing sketches and trying to think of how we could put something together that would fit and meet the requirements of the histology laboratory. And gradually, the designs morphed into these TrueSlice and TrueSlice digital devices that we came up with. I did it in cahoots with a company, of course, who made the devices for me and helped us with the designs, and that was CellPath. But essentially, that's how the devices came about. I did do quite a lot of reading around the subject, I guess, and it's quite interesting to think that there's not been a tremendous amount of innovation in the way we do histological dissection over decades, if not hundreds of years, in fact. I didn't really know until I started reading that the scalpel blade was, in fact, invented by the Romans, and yet that is still the primary tool that we use for histological dissection. So I think it was ripe for some innovative developments and expansive ideas. The proof of the pudding, of course, is in how well these devices do across the whole gambit of histological tissue types that we have in histology these days, which is quite extensive, as I'm sure you're aware. So that's roughly the background as to how the design and the devices were made. We did do some trials, which is basically what the poster was about, which was testing it in five different large teaching hospital establishments within the UK and finding out what their experiences were of the devices. And the feedback was generally well received. And the poster highlights the precision and accuracy achieved with the devices, which was quite consistent across most tissue types. And the publication of the paper is actually out any day now, in fact, I should think at the end of the year, in the British Journal of Biomedical Sciences. So the actual full details and evaluations are highlighted in that paper. And it's the second one of two. So the first paper was really dealing with the conceptual idea of a design like we came up with, and the second paper was dealing with the actual testing in earnest across several sites to establish whether it met all the criteria that we originally stipulated. The only other thing I'd like to add, David, if you're still there, is to say that the design was also constructed with a histologist in mind. So what I tried to do was try to make it look very similar to a microtome.
Yeah.
Because I figure that people are used to seeing microtomes and they know what the microtome does. And in fact, the device that measures the parameters of thickness is in fact a micrometer, which is the same device that you have in a microtome. I didn't think there was any need to reinvent the wheel if we already had the wheel. So it was just applying the concepts to another area in histology where we know it's been proven and tested to work. So we know in routine histology that section cutting is best done with a microtome. And that has stood the test of time and is still the most popular tool. So applying the same concepts that are in that to a device to improve accuracy and proficiency at a cut-up bench or a dissecting or grossing bench would seem very, very logical to me. There's a final point, which is that I know national standards and international standards of laboratory accreditation are more and more pressing on issues about assuring accuracy and precision. And and this is very difficult with cut-up procedures because we use rulers. And rulers are subjective and in the sense that we think we're measuring something, but we have no means of testing that we're measuring something accurately, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Whereas if you have something that gives you a reading, can confirm and is calibrated to meet that requirement, then in a way you meet that standard by setting a calibrated device that can measure that thickness. So I think that was the other side, to try and meet the current standards of practice or the way current standards of practice of dissection were going. And to do that, we would have to have something that was calibratable, hence the microtome issue, and also that could be checked and calibrated with a standard set of testing reagents or measurement tools, which is currently what's the practice with this device. So I enjoyed doing it. I enjoyed coming up with an idea. I enjoyed making it. And I would say if anybody likes Meccano, it's a bit like that, really. You can bolt it all together. It's made of solid steel. And it all clips together, and you can clean it easily and put it all back together again. So it's quite good for those people in the histology world that like models, so they can take it apart, put it all back together again, and just give it a wash down. So I think from that point of view, it's quite easy to use. So really, that was an attempt to try and meet what I believe is current requirements for this, and without getting too bogged down with electronics, because I feel when you're dealing with caustic reagents like formalin and maybe acids as well in some cases, you need to have something that's quite robust but yet accurate without having too much electronics involved. So I feel that's the way to go with these devices, and hopefully the general public that use them will see it similarly.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a couple of questions. When I was reading through the abstract, it sounds like you really did quite a few different types of tissue. Did you find that certain types of tissue were very problematic? And I think of, in particular, breast tumors.
Yes, indeed. Very good point. And yes, of course, I don't believe it's achievable to produce a device that can do what we want across the entire dimensions of all the tissue types we have. It would be almost impossible to get that degree of accuracy and consistency across everything. However, what we did find in the five sites that we did, there were a few tissue types that were slightly more problematic, notably breast, and interestingly, not across the board. So some people got on very well with their breast lumps and using this device. Yeah. Others had more problems. So what I feel is an issue that probably needs to be addressed is, in fact, the consistency of use. So these are devices that are new. They've been given to labs who've never seen anything like it. They've been given instruction how to use it, but you need to get familiar with it, and you need to get how you use it in your lab established. And I think there's a bit of that possibly contributes to some variation in how some people do very well with breast bits and other people didn't do so well with it. So I think there's a bit of that involved. It's about, so a familiarity of the use of the kit is a factor. However, it's difficult to establish that on the data that we had. But we did try a whole assortment of tissues, and the majority of them were getting accuracy and precision readings of over 90%. So consistently. So I think that's the issue. You probably know as well as I do, David, that when you cut things by eye and with a ruler, and it's a bit hard,
yep.
you'll end up with something that looks a bit like a loaf of bread where you've cut it, you know, an unsliced loaf where you're cutting it,
yeah.
and it's thick at one end and it's thin at the other.
Absolutely.
Because that's the human eye. That's the yep. judgment that we think is accurate. And it's accurate within a couple of millimeters, but a couple of millimeters is quite inaccurate in
yeah.
real terms because of the yep. consequences that has for tissue processing and all the subsequent investigations you do in histology lab. What I think is yep. not understood here is, in fact, how important this is. Mm-hmm. We're only just beginning to understand it. I mean, during the 80s, we had this big explosion in immunocytochemistry and how we retrieve antigens and
yep.
mm-hmm. how things are, how fixation is critical to the process. I actually think we stepped somewhere in the middle of a pathway that should have begun at the beginning, which is that if you've got the tissue fixed and processed properly, in other words, you've dissected it accurately, then all the subsequent steps that you're then going to do with your processing and your immunocytochemistry and your insight, your hybridization, and also molecular biology would actually be more consistent.
Yep,
because the number
I
of times
totally
you
agree.
Get things where things are not processed properly, therefore we couldn't amplify the tissue, it wasn't fixed properly, so we couldn't get the signal, etc., etc., etc. It all stems from, firstly, either not having appropriate fixation in the first instance, but more appropriately, probably not dissecting adequately sized pieces at the dissection grossing bench, which subsequently meant you had uneven, thick tissue processing with uneven effects. Therefore, what you were seeing in the higher, more sophisticated tests was being compromised because the sensitivity of all these tests increases as we go through in situ and as we go through into molecular. The sensitivity increases each time. So the mistakes you're making in the early part of the process are, if you like, substantially increased by the time you get to the more sophisticated tests.
Yes, I find that in my laboratory as well, that the biggest issue in not having an assay to work properly tends to be due to the pre-analytical
yes,
conditions
absolutely.
Of a sample. So
absolutely.
When the tissue was collected, the cold ischemia time, and also mm-hmm. the section thickness
mm-hmm.
before putting into paraffin processing.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, there's a lot of variation from one laboratory to another on
mm-hmm.
how thick they cut their sample, and then whether if they cut it evenly, you know, the thickness is even across the sample. So
mm-hmm.
I've actually suggested that people try to cut 3-millimeter slices
mm-hmm.
To really aid the best fixation, and some laboratories that seems to be difficult for them to do.
Yeah, consistently, I imagine
yeah.
it is. I mean, that's probably true of nearly every laboratory because you do have to pay great attention to detail. And at the end, if you're only really using a ruler as your guiding implement to check your thickness, then it's not
right.
much of an assurance. The other point is that human nature dictates that we think we're cutting in a straight line, but we're probably 10 degrees out as a minimum every time we do it. Because that's just the way we are. You know, we're following our own hand-eye coordination, and there is an inherent mistake factor in that process. And I think that is the contributing factor to a lot of the variation that is achieved for all the tests that follow
yes.
the grossing bench procedures. By and large, of course, we're all very good at it because we all know roughly what we're doing. But we are going to get cases on a regular basis where we don't get it right, and those invariably are the cases that you really need to do all these further tests on and investigative tests that are going to be slightly compromised as a result of that initial step. I don't think I'm saying anything that isn't reasonably logical to anybody who has pondered on the project.
Not at all.
But I think it's poorly understood in the terms of its practicality. So what do they need to do to try to address that, and really that's what these devices are an attempt to do. They're not the only devices out there. They're new in the sense that it's a design that's not I've not seen elsewhere,
right.
And I've deliberately tried to make it look like a microtome type device because I think that's what people are used to.
Yeah.
So in many ways that's the idea behind it. And the concept of how it works is the same as a microtome in the sense that the measurement device is a micrometer. But I think the issue that I've discovered from all these studies and post the poster that was presented at the NSH was, in fact, pondering on it a bit more, is that, in fact, what I feel is the nitty-gritty now is actually the familiarity of use. So I'm looking forward to seeing those centres that did have it for the period and how they now feel a few months down the line when they've tried it more, and how comfortable they feel with it, having had more exposure to it. Because a lot of these devices were given to them, you know, for a week or two, here you go, try this. It's not ideal. You really want it there for a period, and you want them to be comparing what they're currently doing with a new device to see there's some consistency of performance compared to what they were doing in their normal practice.
Do you see this as being a follow-up poster or maybe a workshop?
Interesting you should say that, because I am going to propose a workshop along the lines. I'm going to put one together for next year, and it'll be a wet workshop. My intention is to select other devices as well as this one to allow people to try using them and see what they think.
But in
an environment where they can practice it without any constraints, and also ask questions of the presenters, which will be myself and a few colleagues, about histological dissection in general. I think the NSH has got a pretty good reputation in this particular area of science, and I do know for a fact there were some excellent talks given this year on the matter. So there's a lot of experts out there, all of which have got very valuable points of view that can contribute to this. But I think a workshop based on the practicalities of a wet workshop, where they can actually get their hands on two or three different types of tools to demonstrate this, would possibly be the best way forward. So I am intending to submit something along those lines for the next year.
Excellent. Yeah, I look forward to seeing that. I think it's an excellent will be an excellent workshop, especially with it being hands-on. And then I think this is going to go a long way to try to standardize the pre-analytical processes.
Absolutely, yes.
that tissues go through. And I would really love to see the majority of labs adopt a technology like this. I think it would be really terrific.
Mm.
Now, if you could give some advice to maybe a junior histologist who hasn't presented a poster on a topic, what type of encouragement or suggestions could you give that person to give them the confidence to present?
Yeah, I think it's a big step, and I remember it when I was doing it, and I think there's nothing you have to have a leap of faith, I think, is the first point I'd say to them. You know, you may not feel that what you've got is that exciting, but if you've thought it through and perhaps sought some advice from experienced hands within your working environment to see whether they think what you've come up with or what you'd like to present is interesting enough to be of value, then that's the first thing they should do, is try and evaluate that they do believe they've got something that is of interest. The second thing, and this is probably something that I've always held dear to myself whenever I've done things, is that I tend not to like to do what I call me too studies. I say that in a very open way. I have less interest in looking at what somebody's done when they've already done it five times before and the data is no different to what was already published. So those don't really add an awful lot to a meeting if it's well and truly out there and you've just done something that's very similar. So it needs to be a little bit design innovative and tries to ask some key questions. So writing down what you are trying to address, what are the things that you want to put across, is very helpful when you're putting a poster or a presentation together, because those points are the things that need to come through in the conclusion. Did you or did you not manage to prove those objectives that you set out to do? And I think that's probably the best way of approaching it. The final thing I'd say is that it's difficult for anybody who's new to this to have the confidence, and confidence is the key. You've got to try it, and like all things, science is no different, in my opinion, that the more you practice it, the more your confidence will grow.
Right.
And so in many ways, people prefer to do posters because it's less traumatic, I suspect, because they can actually prepare the material and answer, and even have pet answers to any subsequent questions they may be posed. Going into the lion's den in an oral presentation is somewhat different because you have no idea what you're going to get asked. But actually, that is probably the best arena to try to get into, because in the end your confidence levels grow faster much quicker that way, I believe.
Yeah. And it's good to start with a poster and then work your way up.
Exactly. But have objectives set and work out what you're going to say and have clear punchlines. Also, when you're doing a poster, don't over elaborate anything. I think people sometimes write very lengthy methodologies. And frankly, if it's not punched in bullet point fashion where people can take it in quickly and understand what you're doing, then you've lost half the audience straight away before they even get to your conclusions. So I think that's important. So when you're doing your poster, think about your layout, think about your design, think about the key punchy points that you need to make and make them punchy. And then also at the conclusion, make them concise concluding points. Again, I'd even use bullet points and also source a reference section because people love to know where this may have come from. Where can they read more about something? It's not just about reading what you've done. It's about reading what you read to do what you did. I think that's of interest to them. So the reference section is also important. I think that's all I'd say, really.
Yeah, those are excellent suggestions, and I just want to thank you again for taking the time to provide this feedback and this interview on your poster, and really appreciate the comments that you made, and I think this is a really great technology. Again, I look forward to seeing this as a wet workshop this coming year, and I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much, David. That's very kind of you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the 2016 NSH Poster Presenter Series. We hope you enjoyed this interview and will share it with others. Visit www.histoconvention.org to learn how you can present at 43rd NSH Symposium and Convention.